Christina, we're ready whenever you are.
Thank you. I do not have a gavel here, so I'm going to try to make some noise with a three-hole punch. I call this meeting to order. All the representatives of the commission are present. I am Deputy State Controller Christina Kunkel. Joining us today is Dr. Carl Larson, Policy Director and alternate for Lieutenant Governor Eleni Kunalakis. We are also joined by Michelle Peralt, representing the Department of Finance.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum present. In addition, I would like to identify the members of the staff of the Commission participating for this hybrid meeting. Public speaker announcer Jeff Plovnik, and participating virtually is meeting liaison Kim Lunetta.
For the benefit of those in the audience, the State Lands Commission manages state property interests in over 5 million acres of land, including mineral interests. The commission also has a responsibility for the prevention of oil spills at marine terminals and offshore oil platforms and islands, and for preventing the introduction of marine invasive species into California's marine waters. Today, we will hear requests and presentations involving the lands and resources within the commission's jurisdiction. First, I want to take a moment to acknowledge and express respect and gratitude to the Nisenan, Wintun, Miwok, and Maidu people who have inhabited the Sacramento River Corridor, Valley, and Foothills for countless generations. Since I am chairing today's meeting from San Francisco, I would also like to acknowledge the Ramaytush Ohlone peoples who have fished these bay and coastal waters since time immemorial. I also want to take a moment to honor the California Native American communities all across the state for carrying on diverse cultural and linguistic traditions, sustainably managing the land that we now share. Native people have maintained a constant presence on the landscape for many thousands of years, and they are essential stewardship partners, whether along the coast, along our rivers and valleys, or in our fragile deserts. We thank California Native American communities for participating in this commission's activities and for their essential role in maintaining and adding to our state's rich cultural legacy. Now, I want to turn it over to Dr. Dumlao to quickly share some instructions on how we can best participate in this meeting so that it runs as smoothly as possible.
Thank you, Chair Kunkel. There are two public comment sessions. We will take public comment during the first session for a maximum of 30 minutes due to the extent of our meeting agenda. Our second public comment session occurs at the end of our meeting. If you would like to speak during our open public comment period or during a public comment period that is part of an agenda item, please complete an electronic request to speak form available at our homepage. We will take those members of the public who are here in person first, and then hear comments from those members of the public who are participating virtually. We will call on you in the order in which you submitted the electronic request to speak form. For those participating virtually, please make sure you have your microphones or phones muted to avoid background noise. To help us call on you through Zoom, please raise your hand during the appropriate comment section one of two ways. First, if you are attending on the Zoom platform, please raise your hand in Zoom by clicking on the hand icon at the bottom of your screen. Second, if you're joining our meeting via phone, you must press star 9 on your keypad to raise your hand to make a comment. If you are calling in and want to view the meeting, including the PowerPoint presentations, please view the meeting through the CalSPAN live webcast link. There will be a slight time delay, but it will avoid an echo or feedback from using the Zoom application and your phone. We will call on individuals who have raised their hands in the order that they are raised using the name they registered with or the last three digits of their identifying phone number. You may receive a pop-up indicating you are being promoted to panelist. Please be sure to accept the invitation. After you are called on, you will be unmuted so that you can share your comments. Please also remember to unmute your computer or phone and identify yourself. Remember, you have a limit of 2 minutes to speak on an item, which may be adjusted as needed to ensure all speakers have a chance to speak. Please keep your comments respectful and focused. We will mute anyone who fails to follow those guidelines or, at worst, dismiss them from the meeting. If anyone is having logistical or technical difficulties, please don't hesitate to reach out to slc.helpdesk@slc.ca.gov. The Commission has also established an email address to compile public comments for our meetings. The address is CSLC.commissionmeetings@slc.ca.gov. Chair Kunkel, that concludes my hybrid meeting instructions. We are ready to move to the first public comment period.
Thank you, Dr. Dublau. Our next order of business is the public comment period. If anyone wants to address the commission on any matter not on today's agenda, staff will call on those who are here in person first, who are there in person first. Next, we will move on to those joining us virtually. Jeff, please call on the first person who would like to make a public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our first commenter is here in person. I'd like to call on Dr. Richard Navarro. Dr. Navarro, please make your comment.
There we go. Okay, a little technical. Good afternoon. I'd like to thank the State Lands Commission staff for your hard work and dedication to all California residents, particularly those without a voice in the policy arena. Dr. Dumna, Jeff, and Ben, wherever you are, thank you for being present for us. Staff Report 105 has a great deal for one to digest. However, I'm here to briefly comment on what's not in the report. The report does not specifically acknowledge the equal rights of all California residents, particularly mooring permit holders, to the Newport Harbor tidelands, as compared to residents, yacht clubs, and other private parties that hold city permits to park their boats on state tidelands. The fact that most of us do not vote in Newport Beach elections leaves us without representation in the decision-making regarding the city's management of the harbor and state tidelands. I want to emphasize that all other tideland permit holders are represented on the City Council and the Harbor Commission. Recently, Ann Stetton, the Newport Mooring Association president, met with the city manager and requested to be included in the formulation of the city's plan to respond to the staff report. The request was rebuffed, and instead we were told that the city will develop its plan, to which we would be able to respond after it is completed. Deja vu all over again. It's worth repeating that the city will develop its plan without input from individual mooring permit holders, and included in the city are resident pier permit holders, yacht club mooring permit holders, commercial pier permit holders, and other private permit holders. Where is the representation of the mooring permit holders? How are our perspectives taken into consideration in the plan's formulation? Given this lack of representation in the formulating the city's response to your report, mooring permit holders like me have no other recourse than to have a voice, than to come before you, to plead with you to ensure the perspectives of mooring permit holders are represented in the deliberations and the formulation of the plan. And finally, you can have an immediate impact. Tomorrow night, the City Council will be forming an ad hoc committee to develop its plan for the formula for in response to your staff report. And you can instruct, persuade, otherwise ensure that our voices are part of that formulation process. Thank you very much.
Our next speaker is on Zoom. I would call on Adam Leverins to please present your comment.
Hi, is my audio coming in okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, great, thanks. I had a slide if you could call that up, please, as I get started. This history of the State Lands Commission is from a tab on your website. It identifies two iterations predating the commission and notes that in 1937, serious irregularities surfaced regarding various matters and that state personnel were charged and dismissed from service. Their behavior, malfeasance, and significant controversy led to the creation in 1938 of the commission you're now seated on. Since then, as now, the commission has consisted of the lieutenant governor, the state controller, and the governor's director of finance. The goal being that a combination of the two principal financial officers of state and two statewide elected officials would ensure that decisions made by the commission would be fiscally sound. At your December 16, 2025 meeting, the lieutenant governor acknowledged being in receipt of materials which had been sent to all commissioners, alternates, and various members of staff. I was very troubled that day to see those positioned as California's highest level financial stewards and two elected officials who I believe are running for office in 2026 showing little to no interest in facts evidencing many millions of dollars having been lost to the public through Newport Beach's unique style of tidelands management, nor to show any interest in documented local level corruption of the tidelands appraisal processes. Such serious things having fallen outside of the scope of December Staff Report 105 and your adoption thereof, being dismissed as, quote, other topics related to the city's granted land management that are not discussed or have not been addressed in a comprehensive manner, close quote, creates the impression that the State Lands Commission has lost its path. We've heard and read a lot of provably inaccurate, uninformed, and counterproductive things coming out of the city of Newport Beach. I heard a number of these things at the meeting on December 16th. I've seen the city have an apt ability at manipulating state-level staff, and I think I recognize the workload you all face, considering how much stress, time, and expense city's deception has cost me over the last couple of years. I do empathize with you and your staff. I do not, though, accept your unwillingness to talk about millions of dollars lost from the people of California over at least a decade and the participation of city actors with financial and other interests in those transgressions. I'm asking that you step up and act in accordance with what this commission was formed for. I have faith in you. You need to, when the city says something, fact check it. And reach out to people that aren't going to try and deceive you. And again, thank you for your time, and I apologize for any indignation that came across.
Thank you, Adam. Our next speaker is Chaley Halkima. Chaley, please present your comment now.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Thanks again for your good work. The city of Newport Beach practices a kind of financial favoritism where some enjoy the luxury of being preferred tidelands users, but mooring permit holders aren't the chosen ones. We've made huge efforts to clarify decades of discrimination, and in between our humble requests to this commission, we've endured the insecurity that comes with the threat of losing our mooring permit transferability and a 300 to 500% fee increase, though we already pay higher tidelands fees than most user groups, including those that are commercial and for profit. We told this commission that pier permit holders pay nothing to store their boats at their private docks. They pay a fraction of the fees we pay for a larger tidelands footprint. They enjoy exclusive rights, and the city allows them to rent dock space for their private gain, which can amount to many thousands of dollars of profit per year. We're concerned that during the state lands meeting last December 16th, in reference to Staff Report 105, staff mistakenly pointed to the Newport Mooring Association as, quote, highlighting the issue of the low residential pier rates, unquote. But that's incorrect. The point isn't that those rates are too low. It's that mooring rates are too high. We don't need to be continually gaslighted on this issue. We all need to store our boats when they're not in use. Some store them on mooring balls and some at docks. Now, because there's so much cronyism in Newport Beach politics, it's likely that the Newport Mooring Association will become the city's scapegoat when it must go to the residential pier permit holders to tell them why their fees must be raised. We're also exhausted over this. We've been at this for so many years. We do appreciate your help, but please hear us when we say that we are enduring some seriously unfair treatment. Thank you again.
Thank you, Chaley, for your comments. Just a quick reminder, our comment period is going to be 2 minutes for each commenter. The timer was set for 3 minutes accidentally prior to this, but it'll be 2 minutes going forward. All right, let's run that back. It'll actually be 3 minutes. So we will continue going forward with 3 minutes for each commenter.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is George Halkema. George, please present your comment.
My name is George Hilkema. I'm a 90-year-old, and I've had my sailboat on a mooring in Newport Beach or Newport Harbor for 40 years. I've been a board member of the Newport Mooring Association for 35 years and have spent uncountable hours addressing the issues of mooring permit fee increases and mooring permit revocation. I am disappointed that the Commission approved Staff Report 105, in particular because it declined to take a position to require the City of Newport Beach to compensate mooring permit holders if it does, indeed, end permit transferability and take our permits. This commission has been made aware that many of us paid thousands of dollars for our permits. We were directed by the city staff to buy a permit from someone who had one for sale. There was no standardized permit fee. The process was defined and regulated by the City of Newport Beach and the Orange County Harbor Patrol. The city participated when it sold moorings in the early 2000s. Now we are essentially being penalized for following the rules, and that is unfair. You know, there was a mooring buyback proposal in 2022 to put aside $1 million a year for 30 years. Now it appears that the city has opted to use financial warfare to price us out of the harbor. It has already converted 17 mooring permits to city-owned licenses, for which it charges boaters $600 a month for a 40-foot mooring. That high rate has worried many of us. Please use your oversight to make sure the City of Newport Beach treats Tidelands users equitably. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, George. Our next commenter is Michael Brandon. Michael, please present your comments.
Good morning, Chair, Commissioners, and staff. Michael Brandon, here to speak about the report on the City of Newport Beach's Public Trust Lands Management, published late last year. You know, I too am pretty disheartened by the fact that the public pointed out language that was incorrect or misleading in this report, but the Commission passed it without revisions. One such instance of incorrect or misleading language is page 26, paragraph 4, sentences 4 and 5, which read, according to city records in 2024, the city received $72,678 in revenue from mooring permit transfer fees, while $2,536,200 was paid to private parties for mooring permits sold on the private market. The revenue received by the city in 2024 was approximately 2.87% of what was paid to private parties for permit transfers. This lacks a key piece of information, which is the fact that the city, and therefore the Tidelands, aren't just compensated once during the transfer of permits. Instead, they are compensated monthly in perpetuity. This crucial fact is intentionally or unintentionally missing from sentences 4 and 5, which should read, in my opinion, according to city records in 2024, the city received $1.9 million in revenue from moorings, while $2,536,200 was paid to private parties for mooring permits sold on the private market. The revenue received by the city in 2024 was 75% of what was paid to private parties. And I'd like to just add the fact that this amount of money that's exchanged hands privately, this $2.5 million number, that is not all capital gains, that is not profit. A big chunk of that was the cost to acquire the permit in the first place to then pass it on to someone else. And this is the system that the city established. I'm just I mean, we kept talking to you guys over and over, and you just omitted some really important things in this report. And I'm, you guys are the state. Who are we going to go to if you fail us? Anyways, I understand why you omitted this fact. You're building up a justification to pressure Newport to revoke permit transferability. I get it. The issue I have with your approach is that you're not doing this to any other kind of tideland permit in Newport. And by doing so, I believe you're furthering the already blatant inequalities you have uncovered in this investigation. You have a chance to make this right. You have oversight. Newport is still working on this. Please do not leave us in the dark. Thank you for listening to me, and I receive the rest of my time.
Thank you, Michael. Our next commenter is Tara Rangifo. Tara, please present your comments.
Good afternoon, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Tara Ranjifo, and I'm an attorney with the Environmental Defense Center. EDC has worked on the 4-H platform abandonment issue since the 1990s and currently represents Get Oil Out, the Santa Barbara Ventura chapter of the Sierra Club, and Citizens Planning Association. We wanted to express our thanks to the Commission for postponing the item related to Chevron's requested lease termination and final shell mounds disposition. We are looking forward to making sure there is adequate review and meaningful public participation on this item going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Tara. There are no other hands raised at this time, so that would conclude our public commenters.
Thank you, Jeff. That concludes our first public comment period. So the next item of business will be the adoption of the minutes from the Commission's meeting on December 16th, 2025. And as a reminder, when we have the alternates for both constitutional officers here, one of us does have to abstain on one of those items. You'll see that happening. So may I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
And I'll second. So we have a motion by Commissioner Perrault and a second by myself, Commissioner Kunkel. Oh, we can't do a unanimous vote,
No,
right?
we'll have to do a roll call vote.
Okay, let's conduct a roll call vote, please, Dr. Dumau.
Commissioner Perrault.
Aye.
Commissioner Larson.
Abstain.
Chair Kunkel.
Aye.
The measure passes 2-0 with one abstention.
Thank you. The next order of business is the Executive Officer's Report. Dr. Dumlau, may we have that report, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So for today's Executive Officer Report, I wanted to highlight a couple things that are listed in my Executive Officer Report, and I encourage everyone to go to the meeting agenda website to see the full report. But first, I did want to highlight that commission staff did transmit the report on the City of Newport Beach's public trust lands management to the city following our last meeting in December. Commission staff met with city staff in January to discuss the report and next steps. City staff conveyed their intent to comply with the recommendations discussed in the report. And Commission staff made it clear that we intend to work with the city, and we encourage city staff to work with all members of the community impacted by future changes. We will continue to monitor the city's progress and report back to the Commission with updates during executive officer reports, as well as before our or during our June Commission meeting. Second, I wanted to highlight, because I'm always very excited to be able to highlight these things. The commission staff continue to make progress removing abandoned vessels from the Delta. In Broad Slough, which is east of Suisun Bay, staff facilitated the removal of 13 of 22 abandoned and derelict barges that we've identified in the area. Third, the commission released its notice of preparation for the Platform Holly decommissioning environmental impact report. This is a big step in our Platform Holly story, and we have a public comment period for the NOP, which closes on March 6th, so coming up. And the commission will be holding scoping meetings in person and virtually on February 19th at 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. at the Goleta City Hall. So I encourage anyone who is interested in this process, in having their voice heard as we scope out what the decommissioning process will look like to participate in those meetings. And last, I wanted to highlight some activity on our forested school lands. This is an area that has not received a tremendous amount of attention in recent years, but we have some pretty exciting projects going on there. The commission launched the first commission-managed fuel reduction project in decades recently. The Prosser Dam Fuel Reduction Project near Truckee, it's a partnership with the Truckee Fire Protection District. And the project is funded by the School Land Bank Fund and the Truckee Fire Protection District. So this is the result of being able to bring on additional staff on the commission to handle these types of projects and to inform our management of forested school lands. And so we're pretty proud that we're able to take those resources that are made available to us and put it to good use. And with that will conclude my executive officer report. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Dumlau, and just want to celebrate all of the amazing work that staff is doing. Can we take a moment to, I would like to let you, Dr. Dumlau, read some of these staff updates. I saw that we have a couple people celebrating 25 years of service.
Yes, absolutely. One second while I pull my thing up. It is very exciting, and one of the, actually, hold on. I printed it just for this purpose here. Give me one second.
I have it in front of me too.
Here we go. I got. Yes. So we have some pretty exciting announcements with Adrian Portillo on our team. He's been promoted to Analyst 2. Drew Simkin is our newest public land manager, and Samantha Hodge, a personnel supervisor. So it's always exciting to be able to promote our very talented team members. And then we also are excited to announce some new folks to our team. So we have Steve Blansett and Za Lin as our new marine safety inspectors with our Marine Environmental Protection Division. And because he couldn't get enough of the commission, we welcome back attorney Patrick Huber. and lastly, I did want to acknowledge, or not lastly, but I did really want to acknowledge Ninette Lee and Teresa Haynes for their milestone. 25 years, I mean, it's just incredible amount of time devoted to the state of California. And lastly, it's always kind of a bittersweet moment, but Michelle Arroyo left our commission. She retired, and I had a chance to join her retirement party, and it was clear from all the comments from everyone on the commission just how much she was a glue. She was the glue to that team over in the Hercules office. And, she was always someone who stepped up whenever there was a need on the commission to do whatever was needed. And she is retiring and moving on to be closer to family. And it sounds like she will be closer to Disney World and is excited about that. So we wish her the best as she moves on to this next phase in her life.
Thank you so much, Matt. And the staff are really the backbone of all of the work that we do. So I appreciate taking the time to recognize their hard work. Thank you so much. Commissioners, do you have any comments or questions? I think that's a no.
No, thank you.
Thank you. Jeff, do we have any public comments for the executive officer's report?
We do not have any public comments for the EO report.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. The next order of business will be the adoption of the consent calendar, items 1 through 70. Are there any items, commissioners, that you would like removed from the calendar? Then no. I will call on Dr. Dumlau to indicate which items, if any, have been removed from the consent calendar.
Yes, Madam Chair. So we have removed a few items. We have removed consent items 50, 61, 68, and 69, as well as regular item 72. And they were all removed from the agenda, and nothing on the consent calendar has been moved to the regular agenda.
Okay. Do we have any comments on consent?
We do not have any comments for the consent calendar.
Then may I have a motion to adopt the consent calendar and a second?
So moved.
Seconded.
We have a motion by Commissioner Perrault and a second by Commissioner Larson. And no, not a unanimous vote. Dr. Dumlao, will you please conduct a roll call vote?
Yes. Commissioner Perrault.
Aye.
Commissioner Larson.
Aye.
Chair Kunkel.
Abstain.
That measure passes 2-0 with one abstention.
All right. The next order of business will be the regular calendar.
All right. And if I may just take a quick moment and acknowledge item 72. I just know there was a lot of public comment and a lot of public interest. And so I just want to, if it's okay with the chair, just highlight for the public
Absolutely.
where they may be able to find some additional resources to review on this particular issue. So this is the 4-H shell mounds item that was postponed to a future meeting. And I really want to just thank members of the public and elected officials that commission staff have had the opportunity to discuss this topic with over the last couple months. And so we're very grateful for those discussions. If the public is interested in learning more, I would like to direct people to our website, which contains a page devoted to the 4-H shell mounds. It also includes copies of the proposed lease termination agreements, which we strengthened after discussions with the Coastal Commission and other interested parties. I also encourage everyone to look at the peer-reviewed assessment we released last April. And the assessment summarizes decades of research on the stability of the mounds and the potential risks. It's the most comprehensive report on the mounds and is the best resource available to guide upcoming decisions. Just wanted to make sure the public was aware of all those resources in between commission meetings. That brings us to the next order of business, which is item 71. And, oh
Can
yeah,
you
go
tell
ahead.
us where can they find that on the commission's website? Do we have a
Yeah, there is
link?
on the homepage. You can see it right now. If you scroll down, there is a link for it's a Chevron 4-H shell mounds. But you can also find that in the information tab at the top of our webpage. And if you scroll down to oil and gas, there is a link on that page as well.
Wonderful. I followed along and I see it. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Item 71 is a presentation by staff to consider approval of proposed amendments to the California Code of Regulations for the Marine Invasive Species Act enforcement and hearing process. Raya Nedelcheva will give the staff presentation. I'm so sorry.
You said it right.
Okay.
Right. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Commissioners. My name is Raya Nedelcheva, and I'm a senior environmental scientist with the Marine Invasive Species Program. I'm here today to present item 71 and ask for you to consider approval of the proposed amendments to the California Code of Regulations, Title II, Division 3, Chapter 1. Article 4.9, the Marine Invasive Species Act Enforcement and Hearing Process. Next slide, please. The purpose of the proposed amendments to Article 4.9 is to incorporate violations of the Commission's Biofouling Management and Ballast Water Performance Standards regulations into the existing transparent enforcement process and amend the administrative enforcement process for violations of the Marine Invasive Species Act. Next slide, please. The Article 4.9 enforcement regulations were initially adopted in 2017 prior to the adoption and implementation of the Commission's Biofouling Management and Ballast Water Discharge Performance Standards. The rulemaking process for the currently proposed amendments to Article 4.9 began on June 6, 2025, with the publication of the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking in the California Regulatory Notice Register, starting the 45-day public comment period. Staff also held a public hearing for interested parties in July 2025. After reviewing all comments received during the 45-day public comment period, including the public hearing, staff made additional modifications to the proposed amendments. On October 17, 2025, the public was notified of an additional 15-day public comment period, which ended on November 3, 2025. Next slide, please. During both comment periods and the public hearing, staff received a total of 14 communications from 7 organizations. Upon review, staff identified 138 individual comments within those communications. Next slide, please. Commenters on the proposed regulations pointed out that the term coastal waters of the state is not clearly defined in the regulations. They pointed out that coastal waters and waters of the state are distinct terms separately defined in existing law, but the term coastal waters of the state is not defined and could create confusion about the geographic scope of the commission's enforcement authority. Staff agreed with the commenters and in response modified the text of the regulation to remove the definition of coastal waters in any instance where coastal was referenced prior to the waters of the state. These changes greatly clarified the scope of the commission's authority. The modified regulatory text was released for a 15-day public comment period. Next slide, please. The most frequent comment received on the proposed regulations raised concerns over the proposal to classify the failure to document required biofouling management as a Class 1 Major 2 violation, which is the most serious form of violation incurring the highest potential financial penalty. Commenters argued that this is an administrative record-keeping violation, not an operational failure, and should not be classified as the most serious type of violation. Commission staff made no changes to the proposed amendments in response to this comment. The required documentation is directly tied to the required management action because it is evidence of compliance with the required management action. Without evidence, staff cannot confirm whether required management actions were performed. Next slide, please. The summaries of and responses to all comments received by staff will be provided to the public and the Office of Administrative Law in the final statement of reasons. In summary, only one modification to the proposed amendments was made in response to the public comments. That modification clarified the definitions, and staff has determined that no further changes are necessary. Next slide, please. The staff recommendation is for the Commission to approve the proposed amendments to Article 4.9, the Marine Invasive Species Act enforcement and hearing process. Next slide, please. Thank you for your consideration, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Jeff, do we have any public comment for item 71?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We do have a couple of public commenters for this. Our first commenter is Jacqueline Moore. Jacqueline, please provide your comment now.
Good afternoon to the Commission and staff. My name is Jacqueline Moore. I'm from Pacific Merchant Shipping Association. I'm representing many of the vessel carriers and the operators of the vessels subject to the MISP rules, and we also pay the vessel arrival fee, which directly funds the program itself. And I do always want to wish to begin my comments to Statelands by saying that PMSA has greatly appreciated the collaborative relationship that we've long held with Statelands staff, especially with Chris and Raya and group. There's always been some really great engagement communication by the agency, which I very much value. So thank you there. Now, for the rulemaking at hand, I am proud to say my members have received no violations with penalties on this rule, at least in the last 6 years. But regardless of this the seller compliance, we do find the penalties to be unnecessary, and in some cases excessive. And so I'll focus my comment today specifically on the document management portion. Many of the proposed violations you've just heard of are administrative or simple documentation errors in record keeping or reporting or such. And those are proposed to be inappropriately classed as a class one major violation. So this documentation would be grouped with the most kind of egregious violations, like an intent to deceive the agency or actually failing to perform an exchange. And the possibility of receiving this class one violation with fees over $20,000 simply due to a record keeping error is pretty unreasonable in our eyes. So, of course, no one would want such a egregious violation on their record. So, please, I'm appealing to the commission to move it to a class two where it belongs with other record keeping obligations. I look forward to continuing to engage and work collaboratively with staff. And that concludes my comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jacqueline. Our next commenter is Ramin Ross. Ramin, please provide your comment now.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Cal State Land Commissioners. My name is Ramin Ross, Senior Manager at the Western States Petroleum Association, also known as WSPA. We're a nonprofit trade association that represents companies that explore for, produce, refine, and transport petroleum products, and other energy sources in the five Western states. We're speaking today to express our appreciation to the Commission staff for their engagement on this effort. While we may not agree with all of the changes or in this case, wanted more changes. We are appreciative to staff for the time that they took to answer our questions. Thank you for your time today, commissioners.
Thank you, Ramin. We have no other commenters signed up for this item.
Thank you, Jeff. Commissioners, do you have any comments or questions? In that case,
None.
may I have a motion to adopt staff recommendation?
So moved.
And I will second. Dr. Dumla, will you please conduct a roll call vote?
Yes, Commissioner Perrault.
Aye.
Commissioner Larson.
Abstain.
Chair Kunkel.
Aye.
That measure passes 2-0 with one abstention.
Okay. Thank you. And Dr. Dumlao, did I hear you had one more item you wanted to return to a staff update?
Yes, it's a one that does bring some sadness, but it's also an opportunity to really celebrate a particular individual who has meant so much to her community. And so I want to take a moment and pay tribute to Kathy Bancroft. We really want to, celebrate her incredible life and legacy. She was a respected and passionate environmental advocate and community leader from the Owens Valley. And she recently passed away surrounded by her family, her community, and the land that she loved. Kathy was born in the Owens Valley, and her relationship with Patsiata, the indigenous name for Owens Lake, has been lifelong. When Kathy was a small child, her grandmother taught her stories about the lake and the surrounding valley. The masses of migrating birds that darkened the sky, the plants that provided food and medicine, and the importance of the freshwater springs and tributary creeks that have gently replenished the lake for thousands of years. Kathy also carried the weight of generational trauma. Her grandmother was one of the few Indigenous people to escape during the forced relocation efforts by early Western settlers. Kathy returned to Lone Pine in 2002 after completing her graduate studies, serving first as a cultural resource monitor and then as the tribal historic preservation officer for the Lone Pine Paiute Shoshone tribe, providing both her voice and her vision in pursuit of healing for the tribe, for the tribal communities, Patsiata, and the valley. She was a true protector of water, land, and culture. She was a visionary who worked tirelessly to build bridges between communities, raise awareness, and educate policymakers and environmentalists on tribal sovereignty and environmental justice. Kathy made sure local voices and tribal perspectives were heard and respected in decision-making. Her deep knowledge of the region's history and her commitment to preserving its significance touched every conversation and project she was a part of. Commission staff were honored to work alongside her. Her leadership was key in the 2020 return of 40 acres of land to the Lone Pine Paiute Shoshone tribe and in securing the National Register of Historic Places designation for the Patsiada Historic District. In doing so, Kathy showed us that the lake is not an inanimate resource to be exploited. It is a living relative, cataloging and bearing witness since time immemorial. Through her work, Kathy didn't just protect the landscape, she created understanding and partnerships that will last for generations. Her influence will continue to guide how we care for Owens Lake well into the future, as was written so eloquently on the website dedicated to her life. Quote, "We learn to listen at Owens Lake because Kathy Jefferson Bancroft teaches us how," end quote. On behalf of the commission, we extend our heartfelt condolences to her family, friends, and community. She will be deeply missed, but her spirit and vision will remain a guiding force in the work ahead. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much for taking the time and sending so much love to Kathy's family and to her soul for being here with us at State Lands. Such a privilege to have known her. Dr. Dunlau, is it possible to have a slight agenda change? I'm wondering
Certainly.
if we can move into closed session and then come back to address the final item on the regular calendar, 73.
Yes. Yeah, we could do that.
Fantastic.
No problem.
Thank you for the accommodation. So we are moving into closed session and we will see you soon.
We will just ask the members of the audience here to please vacate the room. While we break into closed session. And then I do want to just read a few things at the beginning here to cover what we're going to go into closed session. So actually one second, Madam Chair. So, since one of the items, Madam Chair, is scheduled on our agenda as an informational item, no presentation, we should probably first take that and then we can break into closed session so we have the ability to discuss all of that. So, that is specifically item 75 on our agenda, which, again, for the public, this is an item that is there's no presentation, but we do have an opportunity for the public to comment on item 75.
Okay, let's Jeff, do we have any public comments for item 75?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We do not have any comments for item 75.
Wonderful. So this item is informational and no vote is required.
Okay, all right. So then I have a bit to read here before we break into closed session. Informational item 75 on the regular calendar, Government Code Section 11126, Subdivision C7, allows a state body to discuss real property negotiations in closed session, provided that before closed session, the state body in open session identifies the real property concerned and the person or persons with whom the negotiator may negotiate. In accordance with this requirement, I announce that the commission will conference in closed session with its real property negotiators regarding the following item. Informational item 75 addresses four applications for assignment of leases governing the use of existing offshore oil and gas pipelines traversing state waters associated with the Santa Ynez unit in federal waters, including the Elwood Pier and two mooring buoys offshore Santa Barbara County. Negotiating parties, State Lands Commission, ExxonMobil, Pacific Offshore Pipeline Company, and Sable Offshore Corp. Under negotiation price and terms, lease numbers PRC 4977, PRC 5515, PRC 6371, and PRC 7163. And that is all.
Okay, then we will now adjourn into closed session. Has the public already cleared the room? If you
They're on their
haven't,
way.
please do. And thank you.
All right, Madam Chair, I think we're ready in the room.
Thank you, Dr. Dumlau. I call this meeting back to order. Dr. Dumlau, is there anything to report from closed session?
Yes, one second. Pursuant to Government Code Section 11126, Subdivision C7, the Commission met in closed session regarding applications for the assignment of four leases governing the use of existing oil and gas pipelines traversing state waters associated with the Santa Ynez unit in federal waters, the Elwood Pier, and two mooring buoys offshore Santa Barbara County.
Okay, thank
That
you.
is all.
And we are now going to take a brief intermission and be back in 10 minutes. Let's say 2:40.
Perfect.
Great. And then we will hear the remainder of the calendar, which is items 73 and 74 and the second public comment period, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you so much. I'll see you in 10 minutes.
AGP, are you guys recording? We're about ready to come back into session.
Madam Controller, we are ready. We are going to consider item 73, which is to consider an application for sand mining leases on sovereign land in the bed of portions of the San Francisco Bay and Delta. And for a staff presentation, we have Joe Fable and Nicole Dabrowski here to make the presentation.
Thank you.
So thank you and good afternoon, Madam Chair, Commissioners. My name is Joe Fable. I'm a senior attorney here at the State Lands Commission. Joined today, as Matt said, by Nicole Dabrowski, Chief of the Division of Environmental Science, Planning and Management. Of course, we're here to present on item 73, the San Francisco Bay and Delta Sand Mining Project. Next slide, please. Two applicants, Martin Marietta Marine Operations LLC and Lynn Marine LLC, have applied to the Commission for the issuance of new 10-year leases to continue existing sand mining operations in San Francisco and Susan Bay. Next slide, please. The mining of sand for the use as construction materials has occurred within San Francisco Bay and the Delta for more than seven decades. Channel and harbor dredging to remove sand and other sediment deposits from the bay began in the 1800s, and construction sand mining within the Bay Delta estuary began in the 1930s. The leases for sand mining operations being considered today were originally issued at various times between 1952 and 1997. Marietta Marine Operations and Lynn Marine currently hold leases issued by the Commission to harvest sand commercially in the San Francisco Bay and Western Delta. The harvested sand is used in commercial and public infrastructure, shoreline protection, and beach replenishment projects. Next slide, please. Martin Marietta currently operates four leases in the Central Bay. The Central Bay leases shown here constitute 2,601 acres and consist of nine parcels of submerged lands within four leases currently issued by the Commission. Next slide, please. Lynn Marine operates lease 7781 in the Susan Bay area of the Western Sacramento San Joaquin Delta. The lease area totals 936 acres and consists of two parcels of submerged land within a single Commission issued lease. The figure also includes a privately owned lease area, the Middle Ground Shoal and Susan Bay outside of Commission jurisdiction. Next slide, please. The applicants propose a continuation of the same activities they performed since the Commission last authorized leases in 2012 and 2013 in the same lease areas. The applicants have applied to the Commission for new leases to continue commercial mining of sand for 10 additional years at reduced volumes over the proposed lease term relative to the volumes authorized under the prior leases. These are maximum allowable volumes, but existing permits issued by the San Francisco Bay Conservation and Development Commission authorized smaller volumes, and actual extraction in recent years has generally been lower than that. Next slide, please. Sand mining operations require use of a tug and specialized suction dredge barge, as shown here. A dredge arm is lowered from the barge to the sandy bottom to a maximum depth of 90 feet, and suction is applied to generate a water and sand slurry that is pumped into a hopper on the barge. There are screens on the suction end to prevent entrainment of fish, rocks, and other debris. Once the barge is full, a tug brings the barge to offloading locations throughout the San Francisco Bay Area. Next slide, please. This map shows the location of the five offloading facilities that would be used as part of the continued sand mining operations. This is a reduction from the 9 offloading facilities that were used in prior years and analyzed with the prior leases. Next slide, please. I pass off to Nicole.
Good afternoon. It's staff initiated a California Environmental Quality Act analysis of the proposed sand mining activities in May of 2023. An environmental impact report for the EIR for the previously issued leases was certified on October 12, 2012. That EIR was legally challenged and upheld as compliant with CEQA. Because the proposal is a continuation of the project analyzed in the 2012 EIR, hereafter referred to as the revised project, staff believes that the development of a supplemental EIR or SEIR was appropriate to account for minor changes to the project, notably a continuation of mining activities at reduced volumes with fewer offloading facilities. Additionally, the SEIR evaluates new information from technical studies of potentially substantial importance that were developed since the 2012 EIR. Next slide, please. It's important to note that a supplemental EIR is not a wholly new analysis. The CEQA guidelines are clear that a supplement to an EIR need only contain the information necessary to make the previous EIR adequate for the project as revised. This requires that the prior analysis remains substantially valid and that only minor additions be necessary. Another unique rule of SEIRs pertains to the baseline. The SEIR assumes as a baseline condition the full project analyzed in the 2012 EIR exists. This is because the purpose of the SEIR is limited to determining the degree that the revised project could create a new significant impact or a substantial increase in the severity of a significant impact as compared to the previously analyzed and approved project. Next slide, please. The environmental resource areas evaluated in the SEIR include air quality and greenhouse gas emissions, biological resources, cultural and tribal cultural resources, hazards and hazardous materials, hydrology and water quality, including bathymetry and sediment transport, land use and recreation, and mineral resources. The final SEIR did not identify significant and unavoidable impacts to any resource area. Next slide, please. In assessing the potential impacts of the revised project on the previously mentioned resource areas, staff evaluated multiple technical studies prepared since certification of the 2012 EIR. Those studies are listed in the figure on the slide. These studies focus on a number of topics pertinent to the proposed lease areas in the San Francisco Bay and Suisun Bay, including bathymetric changes analysis. That's the change in underwater depth and underwater topography, sand and sediment transport modeling, benthic assessment, which is evaluation of habitat disturbance and associated impacts to species on the bay floor, benthic infauna data analysis, that's an analysis of the critters that living in the sand and sediment, and sand source stratigraphy, how sand is dispersed and layered over time when deposited on the bay floor. The studies and the SEIR acknowledge that sand mining is an extractive process, that it is not renewable, and that replenishment will not fully replace extraction. The studies have greatly expanded the understanding of bay sediment transport and open the possibility for additional future research. And their conclusions provide substantial evidence that the revised project will not have a significant impact on topography or erosion outside the lease areas. Next slide, please. In addition to the resource areas described in previous slides, the SEIR includes an evaluation of potential project impacts on socioeconomics, energy use, and environmental justice. The potential impacts of climate change and sea level rise on the project, and an evaluation of public trust considerations. Next slide, please. The CEQA process began with public scoping in May 2023, followed by outreach to 18 tribes and 27 environmental justice organizations as part of AB 52 tribal consultation requirements and the Commission's tribal and environmental justice policies. The draft SEIR was released in August 2025 for a 40-day public review period. During the public review, staff hosted two virtual meetings on September 11th to provide an overview of the draft SEIR and receive public comments. The public review period closed on September 29th. Comments were evaluated and responded to, and new information incorporated into the final SEIR, which was released on January 16th, 2026. Following release of the final SEIR, staff found some minor errors and inconsistencies in the document, which necessitated release of an errata to the final SEIR on January 29th, 2026. Next slide, please. Four agencies, seven organizations, and two individuals provided written comments on the draft SEIR. In addition, one speaker at the public meeting provided oral comments. In total, the staff received 170 individual comments on the draft SEIR. Next slide, please. To address comments raised by the public and agencies in the final SEIR, staff developed 11 master responses. These master responses each address a different topic that was raised in multiple comments. These master responses address concerns regarding the length of the public review period, reliance on the certified 2012 EIR, and the baseline used to evaluate impacts for the SEIR. Technical studies used in the SEIR analysis, alternatives, sand transport, public trust considerations, mineral resources, marine mammals, marine birds, and underwater noise. Comments that were not fully addressed by the master responses were responded to individually. Next slide, please. In preparing the final SEIR and responding to public comments, staff also made some revisions to the analytical components of the document. There are two notable additions in the final SEIR. First, the final SEIR includes an expanded analysis of potential impacts from noise generated by project activities on fish and wildlife species. This analysis was added in response to comments recommending that recently updated underwater noise impact data be incorporated into the document, and this impact remains less than significant. Second, staff reevaluated the potential for sand mining activities to cause entrainment and immortality to delta and longfin smelt, both special status species. Changes in the final SEIR more fully and accurately incorporate the provisions of the incidental take permits issued by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, including the requirement for positive barrier fish screens on all mining suction heads and restrictions on mining volume and location for all delta leases during certain times of the year. Further, in response to comments by CDFW, the mitigation measure to minimize impacts to delta and longfin smelt was amended in the final SEIR to incorporate compensatory mitigation requirements to mitigate for impacts to protected species from sand mining activities. Considering these permit conditions and amendments to the applicable mitigation measure in the analysis, the potential impacts to delta and longfin smelt are lessened over that analyzed in the 2012 EIR and the draft SEIR. Next slide, please.
Thank you, Nicole. In administering its responsibilities over public trust lands, the Commission cannot authorize uses that substantially impair the public right to navigation and fishing or interfere with the trust upon which the lands are held. As stated in the staff report, sand mining is not per se a public trust consistent activity. However, there is substantial evidence that these leases will not substantially impair public rights and their issuance would not violate the trust. Section 3.8 of the SEIR details that the revised project, like the current, will not impair nearby non-industrial uses. The revised project will not impair fishing, nor will it impair recreation. And vitally, substantial evidence supported by the technical studies support finding no significant impacts to beach erosion or sand availability. Sand mining, as it's existed for decades, provides benefit to the region and state. Marine sands are used for commercial and public purposes throughout the greater San Francisco Bay Area, including construction of residential and commercial projects, public infrastructure, shoreline protection, and replenishment of beaches and wetlands. As a local resource, bay sands help lower public and private construction costs and reduce associated transportation impacts, air emissions, and greenhouse gas emissions from shipping and trucking commercial-grade sand from outside of the Bay Area. Finally, royalties from sand mining are paid to the state's general fund, which supports and benefits the people of California. Next slide, please. In closing, staff recommends the commission take the following actions. Certify the final supplemental environmental impact report. Authorize issuance of 4 mineral extraction leases to Martin Marietta Marine Operations LLC and 1 mineral extraction lease to Lynn Marine LLC for the extraction of sand and gravel on state sovereign lands for a term of 10 years and adopt the mitigation monitoring program and statement of findings. Next slide, please. This concludes staff recommendations. We're here to answer any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the staff presentation. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Malia Cohen. I'm the chair of the State Lands Commission, and I'm also the state controller. Let me check in. Jeff, do we have any public comment on item number 73?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, we do have public comments for this item.
All right.
Would you like to take the commenters?
Yes, please.
Absolutely. Our first commenter is Eric Guerra. Eric, please provide your comment.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Erica Guerra, Environmental Resources Director for Martin Marietta, one of the project applicants today. First, I want to thank Commission staff and consultants for the extensive technical work reflected in the CIR. The depth of analysis in the record clearly demonstrates the rigor applied to this project. Sand mining in San Francisco Bay is probably one of the most highly regulated activities under this commission's jurisdiction, with layer oversight from multiple state and federal agencies like the Water Board, the 3 wildlife agencies, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and BCDC. Extraction under these leases is tightly constrained to volumes already studied and approved and occurs only in response to demonstrated local need. That means we only mine what is needed. Continued access to a local sand supply supports housing, infrastructure, and shoreline projects that serve Bay Area communities exclusively, while avoiding the environmental cost of long-distance imports. Examples of these projects include affordable housing projects, like in the Treasure Island development, with over 2,000 homes reserved for low-income and on-house households, mixed-use development like Van Ness and Mission on the BRT corridor in San Francisco, commercial development projects like the Chase Center, Salesforce Tower, and the SFPUC Biosolid Digester Plant, rebuilding housing after the 2017 Tubbs fires, and numerous infrastructure projects in the Bay Area like Highway 101 and the I-80 resurfacing project. Several shoreline projects protections like the Ocean Beach Climate Adaptation Projects are all critical to regional economy resiliency and affordability. For these reasons, I respectfully ask the Commission to approve this item, recognizing both the strong public trust protections in the record and the clear public benefits of continued, carefully managed use of these resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Erica. Our next speaker is Bill Butler. Bill, please provide your comment.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. My name is Bill Butler. I am Vice President of Environment, Social, and Governance Programs for Lynn Marine, the other Bay Sand Mining Company. I'd like to echo Ms. Guetta's thanks to state land staff for their deliberate, thorough, and proper analyses contained in the supplemental EIR. I would also like to echo her support for a reliable supply of local sand available for local projects. Bay sand mining efficiently extracts and transports sand on the water to small terminals closer to where the sand is needed and used with very little processing as compared to the alternatives of trucking the material from more distant sources in the Central Valley or importing materials by ship from British Columbia. Each barge load is the equivalent of about 120 truckloads of material, saving millions of truck miles, but with the associated higher GHG emissions, traffic, and road maintenance impacts. It's critical also to have a local resource available that's not dependent on the availability of ships and the uncertainty of tariffs. The analysis of the SEIR provides a conservative fresh look at the worst case impacts of the project at the full maximum volumes across full lease footprints. As Mr. Fable noted, these volumes are further limited by other regulatory agency constraints. Even if full volumes were utilized over the 10-year term of the project, it's conservatively estimated that only about 1.5% of the available sand sediment in the embayments would be utilized. Additionally, actual mining occurs only within small portions of the lease areas. Therefore, public trust resources would not be substantially impaired, even while a critical local resource is made available for projects that benefit the Bay Area. Thank you very much for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you, Bill. Our next speaker is Christian Marsh, who will be followed by Russell Snyder. Christian, please provide your comment.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the Commission, and thank you. My name is Christian Marsh. I have been the CEQA Permitting and Litigation Counsel for the project for the last 15 years. We've been through a lot together. I too would like to commend staff. They have gone above and beyond, and to help illustrate that, I would like to just dive a little bit deeper on a couple of the studies that were conducted as part or after the last EIR and were considered in the new supplemental EIR. First, as a condition of the project's water quality certification from the regional board, Newfields consultants conducted water quality monitoring, affirming that, quote, any physical effects related to plume turbidity, that's the sand sediment that is in the water column, are spatially limited and short-term. The regional board in just 2025 confirmed that mining will continue to comply with water quality standards and will not impair beneficial uses. Also, as a condition of our permits, lessees were required to form a benthic technical advisory committee. That committee was made up of multiple wildlife agencies, federal and state, as well as BCDC and the State Lands Commission. And that technical advisory committee commissioned a further sampling study by Newfields for the benthic habitat, the bay floor habitat, which supports benthic organisms. Again, in Newfields, after doing sampling of both control sites and mine sites, found in 2018 that, quote, there do not appear to be any long-term adverse impacts to the benthic habitat or community. Lastly, on sediment transport and morphology, this was evaluated both by the BCDC-led Technical Advisory Committee, which undertook several studies, as well as your own technical experts, independent of the mining interests. While adding to this, we also note that the sediment availability analysis was quite conservative and that geophysical studies show that hundreds of millions of cubic yards remain in storage within the bay. And with that, I would just say that we have technical consultants available if you have any questions on that. But thank you very much.
Thank you, Christian. Our next speaker is Russell Snyder, who will be followed by Laura Tam. Russell, please provide your comment.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to comment. My name is Russell Snyder, and I'm the executive director of the California Asphalt Pavement Association. Established in 1953, CALAPA, as we're known, is, as its name suggests, a nonprofit trade association that represents asphalt producers, refiners, paving contractors, equipment manufacturers, engineering firms, and even environmental consultants and others that are part of the industry in California. I'm here in my capacity representing the asphalt industry, even though one of the members, for full disclosure, is one of the applicants is a member of our association. But I'm here to just share one aspect of the beneficial use of having locally sourced materials for construction, and that is in our asphalt pavements. You may not know that asphalt surfaces about 95% of paved surfaces around California, roads, highways, freeways, airfields, bike lanes, parking lots, you name it. The street right out front of this building is asphalt. I'm sure you traveled on it to get here today. The other thing about asphalt pavements is they're very sustainable. In other words, asphalt is the most recycled product on the planet. It can be recycled over and over and over and reused when older pavements are need to be rehabbed. It also has been used to help with other environmental issues. Like, for example, our mountains of discarded vehicle tires have been ground up and used in asphalt pavements very effectively, and then have helped reduce that environmental situation. So this is just one aspect of beneficial use, but it's critically important to have local sources of construction materials so that we can do the fixing of the roads that benefit every Californian and the efficient movement of goods, services, and people around our state. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Russell. Our next speaker is Laura Tam, who will be followed by Ben Eichenberg. Laura, please provide your comment.
Thanks so much. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Laura Tam, and I'm the CEO of Bay Planning Coalition, which is a 40-year-old member-supported nonprofit organization that educates and advocates for multiple beneficial uses of San Francisco Bay and its shoreline. We have over 100 members, including public and private entities, and together we support a sustainable environment, a resilient shoreline, effective resources management, working infrastructure, and a strong economy. BPC does not generally comment or come before state agencies to support member-specific projects or EIRs, but today we're here to request your continued support for beneficial uses of Bay resources that support the region's economy and have safely been used to build out the region for more than 70 years. Sand from the Bay is a resource that is used all over the region, as you've heard, for construction and restoration projects, including roads, housing, and beach nourishment, including the Ocean Beach Climate Adaptation Project, which I worked on in a previous role over 10 years ago. 100% of sand mined from the Bay is used in the Bay Area, and 30% of the area's demand for sand is met with this local resource. Bay and Delta sand has a 30 to 50% lower GHG emissions profile than sand trucked in from other areas or brought by rail. Sand has been extracted only under the great scrutiny of multiple regulators and is extracted with careful monitoring and mitigation procedures that address potential impacts, especially for biological resources. Also, the process of offering time-bound leases, as you do, enables everyone to assess the latest science, modify approaches accordingly, as has been happening with these leases, while in the meantime supporting beneficial and public uses, including navigation and fishing. We encourage you and others to consider the negative impacts of not having a local source of sand, which is an essential product that is in demand and is going to come from somewhere. As everyone knows, we have a careful way of permitting things in California, so our materials are going to be among the least damaging of those available on the market. And our local businesses that extract sand have been implementing environmental stewardship in their operations for decades while contributing local jobs. Thank you for your thoughtful stewardship of state resources and for considering these comments.
Thank you, Laura. Our next speaker is Ben Eichenberg, who will be followed by Julie Thayer. Ben, please provide your comment.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Ben Eichenberg. I'm here on behalf of San Francisco Baykeeper and our more than 5,000 members and supporters to urge this commission to reject the proposed sand mining leases. Baykeeper and our team of scientists have been closely tracking sand mining since we helped sound the alarm over a decade ago about the massive costs faced by the public as a result of sediment deficits. But time is short, so let me cut to the chase. We are facing unprecedented environmental challenges. Global seas are rising and our cities are sinking. At the same time, less sediment is coming into the bay to help build our defenses. We are already feeling the effects as our beaches slowly wear away and our shoreline infrastructure is threatened. For example, San Francisco has invested $175 million in Ocean Beach to protect vital wastewater infrastructure. The city must continuously replenish sand at costs exceeding $1 million per application to combat erosion. These costs contribute to the affordability crisis. The single largest cause of sand loss here is sand mining. New research indicates that the bay and nearby ocean beaches are part of one sand ecosystem, and sand is being taken out four times faster than it is replenished. Moreover, wildlife depends on the lease areas, including whales. Yet the final SEIR refuses to treat these conclusions as significant. It treats already permitted mining leases as its baseline, in essence, pre-approving the project and measuring impacts only against itself. It somehow concludes that an alternative which would cut the authorized amount of mining in half would not reduce impacts. And it ignores the impacts of mining a non-renewable resource. For these reasons, we respectfully request that you heed the science and your sister state agencies and reject the proposal to authorize another decade of extracting ancient, irreplaceable sand. Please reject certification of the final SEIR and direct staff to prepare a revised EIR that accurately and properly evaluates these impacts. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ben. Our next speaker is Julie Thayer. Julie, please provide your comment.
Thank you, commissioners, for the opportunity to comment. My name is Julie Thayer, and I work with Farallon Institute. We've done research on seabirds, other predators, and their prey in the central San Francisco Bay since 1996. There's an inadequate baseline for this project, and there have been substantial ecological changes within the Central Bay sand mining lease areas since the 2012 EIR, which have not been adequately considered in the final supplemental EIR. Without this information, effects of the revised project have not been sufficiently considered. There remain omissions of published and other ecological evidence since the 2012 document, erroneous statements and erroneous interpretations of data and other information. Unfortunately, this lack of attention to detail and incomplete understanding of regional marine ecology pervades the SEIR. For example, many fish and invertebrate species use the bay as a nursery area. Our analysis of California Department of Fish and Wildlife trawl data show the highest incidence of Dungeness crab occurring in the Central Bay. No studies or spatial analyses have been done for this or other important fishery species, such as California halibut, etc. Marine mammals such as vulnerable gray whales and endangered humpback whales also now use the sand mining lease areas regularly. Regarding marine birds, environmental hazards exist, which the proposed project risks exacerbating. Pushed inshore due to poor offshore conditions and restricted to a central place, their breeding colonies, while raising offspring, seabirds rely on the surrounding marine habitat for food. Roughly half of the Alcatraz Island seabird foraging habitat lies within the sand mining lease areas. These seabirds and their prey are at increased risk of both direct and indirect negative impacts of the revised project, as well as cumulative impacts, particularly during years of poor marine conditions. In summary, there are still many parts of the final SEIR which are erroneous or inadequate, and therefore valid conclusions cannot be drawn from this document about significant impacts, or lack thereof, on the ecology of the Central Bay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Julie. We have no other hands raised for comment at this time.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I appreciate the comment. You know, I've been in public service 16 years in elected office, and it never ceases to amaze me about all the little things that I don't know in life. And I am grateful for the public commenters, as well as the staff that have done a very good job in preparing this item. Ben and Russell. Russell, I didn't even know there was an association. So appreciate you for flagging that. And SF Baykeeper had a chance to go to your website and take a look at some of the work that you're doing. Very meaningful. I have some comments and a possible action to take, recommendation for an action to take. But I first want to pivot to see if my colleagues want to speak or have any questions at this time. Go ahead.
No, we're good, Controller. Thank you.
You're good? Okay, good. Well, I really do appreciate sand. I mean, just as a kid, I loved it, right? We all played in it. We have a new appreciation. I have a new appreciation for it. I didn't know we depended on it so much. When I think about affordable housing, I'll be honest with you, I don't think about sand. When I think about roads and adaptation projects, sand is not what's coming to the forefront of my mind until this briefing. Now I'll be thinking about sand all the time. And although there are more sustainable alternatives emerging in practice and in development, We, quite honestly, we're just not ready to transition away from sand. Certainly not today, no time soon, not tomorrow. And I understand also that the courts have determined these lease approvals to be legal, that although the extraction is not a public trust consistent, the court has ruled that the activity does not legally impair the public trust. But I got to be frank with you. I believe that there is more that we can do here to meet both our statutory duty to protect the public trust and also acknowledge our fiduciary duty to the people of the state of California. And we know that sand in our beautiful San Francisco Bay is an essentially a finite resource. Sand is the second most consumed natural resource in the planet, and that is only surpassed by water. Suctioning up the sand and creates measurable and irreversible impacts to our fragile ecosystem, and is not a permanent solution. Now, quite frankly, what I am most concerned about by the cyclical nature of sand drift, described in comment letters and EIR responses, is that we may be suctioning up sand from the bottom of the bay only for the company to resell it back to us for sand replenishment projects. Now, that sounds crazy. And I was wondering if the staff could speak to this assertion, excuse me. Staff, are you there? Can we talk about the
Yes,
resale?
Madam Chair.
All right, thank you.
One second.
Well, certainly. Well, no, thank you so much, Madam Chair. So, from my understanding here, I mean, it's mineral extraction. So, again, generally, we're taking one resource and transferring it to another. From all the evidence we've seen, substantial evidence, I mean, the sand that is extracted from the bay goes back to serve the community. It goes through a transaction, clearly a commercial transaction, but then it's again converted for, as we heard testimony from asphalt of concrete development. Again, beach replenishment projects. And if we understand correctly, even the Ocean Beach project itself derived sand that came from the bay here. So again, this, as we have heard, I mean, this is a product that again is necessary really for the development of the Bay Area in California. So it's got to come from someplace there. And the analysis we've done is from a perspective, especially of GHG, air impacts. This sand that's coming from the Central Bay leases and the Delta appears to be the lowest impact sand that can be provided to the region. So if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does answer my question partially. So you're comfortable with the fact that we are dredging the sand out and then they're reselling it back to us to replenish parts of the beach?
Well, we do. And again, hopefully, what helps, I think, staff from that perspective is the results of these 12 sand studies that came out. I
Okay.
mean, this is from a supplemental impact, environmental impact report. This is one of the most supplemented SEIRs there really is, because there was about $2 million, multiple studies with a whole variety of experts working with BCDC and state land staff and a variety of other agencies to develop what we believe to be valid conclusions on the effects of sand mining on coastal erosion. So what that goes to say is that the impacts from the sand mining are localized. Again, from what we can tell here, there's no erosion and change to the topography of the bottom of the bay with after 100 meters from these mined areas. And that's key. I mean, the threshold within CEQA in this area really asks the one question, hey, is this sand mining creating erosion or sedimentation outside of the area being mined? Because we know it's affecting the area being mined. It's more literally,
Joe, may I jump in really quickly for a
Sure.
sec? Thank you. Madam Controller, Madam Chair, I do think your core question was about the resale. And I just wanted to highlight really quickly that this is a very common practice for any extractive mineral lease that we offer anywhere, because the state of California doesn't actually expend the money to go out and do the extraction, whether it's sand or otherwise. We do a public private partnership. We take a royalty share. So the state is actually paid for the share of the sand that we would be entitled to under the work, but we don't have the ability to go out and do this independently. So the subsequent use of the Bay Area sand for whether it's the Ocean Beach project or any other kind of construction project would still be paid by the end consumers. And it would actually be higher if it was coming from out of state or out of country because of the additional costs. So from an economic and an environmental burden, the fact that we're actually able to do this locally reduces those impacts. So it is economically better. It's environmentally better, even though we're not going to say, we don't have to say it's environmentally good. Mm-hmm. It's environmentally better. And at the end of the day, the state actually generates income for the general fund. And this is how those types of minerals, in this case, sand and aggregate, can be produced because the state doesn't produce it itself. So I hope that's a little bit more pointed an answer to the question you asked.
It is. Thank you very much. And I guess I'm just going to have to rest on the 12 studies and all the other agencies, nonprofit organizations, and folks that have been here. I am not an expert in this area. I'm just a common sense person. And it just, the math sounded interesting enough that I just wanted to raise the question for the record. But I'm going to move on. And, you know, my role in this conversation and on this body is as the chief financial officer for the state of California. And so I am always on the lookout for the most responsible use of tax dollars and revenue generation. So Seth, it's interesting that you would bring in that revenue generation for the state of California and that general fund figure. I'm particularly interested in the revenue generation, especially on our state public lands. Because what we're doing is we are allowing these companies to collect our sediment resources in the Bay, resources that the State Lands Commission is entrusted to protect and oversee for all Californians, and then sell the resource as a profit. And this is not an anomaly. Of course, mining resources create revenue for the state, as you stated for the record. And I mean, it's a privilege for the applicant. So first, in the 2012 lease, the royalty was adjusted annually according to the producer price index to account for inflation. There's a lot of talk about inflation in the news lately, and there's a good reason for that. Staff, here's my question for you. I don't see the PPI adjustment referenced in the staff report. I'm assuming it's just an oversight. I understand that it's included in the lease terms, but it wasn't in the staff report. Is that correct?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you for that. So the applicant before us is a 10-year term for five leases. We know that over the last 10 years, since the issuance of the previous lease, new scientific studies have been released related to our sediment budget in the Bay. New developments related to sustainable aggregate alternatives and new data on climate impacts and urgency have also emerged. Science is moving very quickly, and the markets seem to be moving even faster. So what I'd like to do is make a recommendation. I'd like to insert some check-in points throughout the lease. If we could insert a check-in point in year three, as well as year six, I'd be grateful. At these check-in points, I think what we can look for is an opportunity to give ourselves a moment to review the latest scientific data, to review audits, the applicants have provided to us in their financial reporting, and then also potentially reconsider the royalty structure. And again, this will allow us some flexibility in a rapidly shifting space to pivot and then to act on our fiduciary duty as well as our personal responsibility to the people of California. Are you guys still with me over there? Yes, yeah. Michelle? Yeah?
Yeah?
Matt?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yes.
All right. I just want to make sure no one's falling asleep. Doing a lot of talking on this end. But I want to wrap up with this motion. And I want to make sure that my amendments are included as follows in the best interest of the state. First, I would like to direct the staff to review the lessee's books and conduct an audit of royalties paid at year three and at year six of the leases to ensure that the state is receiving the agreed upon royalty. I also want to direct the staff, or I also want to direct in my amendment that there be a provision to be placed in the leases that require staff within 3 years to review and to reassess and renegotiate the royalty rates to ensure that, again, we are adjusted according to the value of the resource and the market conditions. But I want to make sure that I'm clear that in no way should these rates be adjusted lower than the rates that are approved today. I want to ensure that the state and trust are properly compensated for the use of these resources. And then also want to note that within 5 years, I'd like the staff to provide an informational update in open session at a regularly scheduled commission meeting on the status of sand mining activities and the progress of studies and science pertaining to this activity. I am also like to close out with an ask for the staff to include a term in the lease requiring that lessees submit a new application to the commission by year seven. And also to give the commission adequate time to fully analyze the impacts of the sand mining and evaluate any new science that has emerged. Now that is a mouthful, and I will have these amendments written up and provided for you as well, staff. Are there any questions or feedback?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I think we got all of your recommendations to include. I think maybe it's worth turning to our commissioners to see if they have other questions about maybe what was provided or
the
any other questions
was
about the
proposed.
Project.
Absolutely. All right, colleagues.
Just, I think it'd be helpful to the controller's point that was a bit of a list. I think it would be helpful for our own understanding. Mm-hmm. One, are all of those somewhat, I mean, can we put this into an amended version of the motion? I think we need staff's understanding of, I mean, I'll just take the last year, last comment, controller, about, you know, starting the next process 7 years, you know, year seven out of 10. It seems to me we kind of have to do that, don't we? I mean, we did this time around as well, given that there has to be another either supplemental EIR or potentially even a full EIR, depending on the scope changes, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So I think it would just be helpful to have an understanding. I guess my other question too, again, to the controller's point about royalties, you know, when we are going into this lease, is there a soft, I mean, is there hard conditions in which nothing can be renegotiated? Is that already baked in I'm kind of going into contract here, but this is essentially that. Or is there soft terms in which that can be negotiated? And does that align with, I think the controller had indicated 3 years since 6 years, right, controller?
That's correct.
Yeah. So anyway, it'd be helpful if maybe the staff could just walk through each of these so we have an understanding of the feasibility of those. And quite honestly, if there's other additional check-ins, I do agree with the controller having a sense of just what is happening in this space. 10 years is a long time. And so, you know, I would indicate, I know you said it at the top of your comments, controller, but I don't know if you'd put it into the formal recommendation for sort of amending the item, but an actual set time for informational responses back just to the commission. I think you said an open session, and mm-hmm. I can't remember.
I just, yep. I wanted to make sure
5 years. It may need to be more than once in the 10-year period would be the
sure.
only thing I would say, because, sure. you know, again, 5 years could be a long time as well, particularly if we're talking about doing anything with the royalties in between yeah. those timeframes. So,
yeah, so maybe I can just quickly summarize the points as I understand them. One is an audit of royalties at year three and year six.
Correct.
Our commission does do audits. This is not unheard of for our commission to do. And there are times when we've identified things that have been underpaid. And so I think this is a very appropriate thing for our commission to demand at this stage. And then the second point that the commission that the controller mentioned is doing a review at year three to make sure that we are fully realizing the appropriate royalty from this activity. So looking at a variety, there are a couple different ways that royalties can be calculated. And so this would give the commission the opportunity, commission staff, the opportunity to make sure that we are using all of the methods available to come up with the appropriate royalty rate. So again, that does seem to be something that the commission it would be appropriate for the commission to do. And then the other thing that you mentioned, Commissioner Peralta, and that the controller mentioned is within 5 years to provide an informational update on the status of sand mining, both the science and the activities themselves of sand mining in these lease areas. And then the fourth thing is directing staff to require the lessee, if they are looking to renew at the end of their term, to start the process early. So year seven, which is something that we realize in this particular case, you know, that these leases were entered into in 2012. And so the 10 years has come and gone, and the leases are in holdover right now. And what this would do is would help shorten that period if there is ever a drift into holdover by requiring the process to be started early. And as was mentioned, there is environmental review work that will likely have to be done. So the earliest, you know, the sooner we can get started on that will just help us be able to have things ready to go by the time these leases are done. And that way, any future decision is informed by the science as best as we know it at that point. And Chief Counsel?
And Commissioner Peralt, to your question, the applicants are obviously here. We have been negotiating actively on what the final new lease set will look like. So I do think that this is something that we'll take back to them and obviously coordinate, but I do think that the asks are also quite reasonable. For the second ask, dealing with the potential adjustment of a royalty, this may actually be a very good opportunity for us to come back to the commission anyway, because depending on if there are changes that need to be made based on the audits or the royalty structure, we'd probably come back to the commission for an amendment. And we could bring back as a touch base the other information and talk about at roughly year three how the science is evolving. And, you know, depending on what information looks like by year five, we can coordinate with the offices and the commission about, hey, we think that pushing that out a year might be beneficial. So we may end up doing, we could end up something like year three and year six. But I think as a starting point, the halfway position that the chair has suggested actually makes a lot of sense, because it gives enough time for some additional pieces to pass and for the work to begin again. So there's going to be continuing study of the sand sources. So that's just a, you know, a little bit of a wait and see. We have to see what the continuing science says. So I think from those perspectives, these are all quite doable. And I think that, you know, subject to the applicant lessee's agreement and kind of nuancing it out, I think we can move this forward, and particularly because we're in this position of negotiating this lease now.
All right, that sounds good. Are there any other comments from my colleagues?
No further comments. I'll just echo those of my fellow commissioners, and thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you. So that was a motion. Mr. Blackman, if I'm not mistaken, I'll need a second on that motion. Is that right?
That is correct, Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. Colleagues, is there a second for that motion?
Second.
Thank you very much. Do we need to take a roll call vote? Or can we take that without a roll call vote, please?
We have to do a roll call vote.
Okay.
All right. Commissioner Peralta.
Aye.
Commissioner Larson.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. All right, thank you.
That measure passes 3-0.
All right, thank you for the support, colleagues. All right, moving on. Next item. Was that item number 74?
That is correct.
All right, item 74 is an informational update on the state legislation relevant to the California State Lands Commission. There is no staff presentation or action to be taken on this item, but we will definitely hear a public comment. So there are members of the public. Please begin to queue up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have no commenters for item 74.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Thank you. All right. Let's keep moving forward then. with item 75?
Madam Chair, one second
Oh,
here.
you.
One second, Chair. The was raised, and I think this is accurate. The concern was raised that the final motion was in the inclusion of the language that the chair put forward, which was adopted and accepted. But we want to make sure that staff's recommendation to certify the supplemental EIR is also approved. So can we retake the vote on call to make sure that the motion is to include the chair's recommendation in addition to staff's recommendation?
Okay, I'll make a motion to include the recommendations that I read into the record with the staff recommendation.
That's correct.
Second.
Thank you very much. Let's take the roll call vote again.
All right. Commissioner Perrault.
Aye.
Commissioner Larson.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye.
Thank you.
Again,
that passes 3-0.
Colleagues. All right, so we're, Mr. Dumlau, we're on item number 75? No, we took up 75 already. I think we're ready to dismiss.
We have to go to second public comment.
So the next order of business is our second public comment period.
Okay. All right, let's call public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have one person signed up for the second public comment period, Christian Lahage, if you could please provide your comment.
Hi there. Thank you, commissioners. My name is Christian Lahage, and I'm the public policy officer for the Mojave Desert Land Trust. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to thank you for your consideration and approval of item number 67. I wanted to thank you all personally for taking this step towards desert conservation. The Mojave Desert Land Trust acquires, restores, and conveys public lands. We also do seed banking. This also means a lot to me personally. I am a big desert lover. I've been working in the desert since I worked with Senator Dianne Feinstein and was her representative for the region, including the deserts. And so I'm just really proud to be able to continue that legacy and work protecting the desert, and wanted to thank you all for the role that you play in that. So thank you for helping carry that forward and just sending my appreciation. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate that appreciation. And appreciate your advocacy for the desert. Okay, Executive Director Dumlau.
Yes, Madam Chair. So we've already done our closed session, and we've finished all the items that we need to hear for a vote. So our next item is to take any comments or questions from the commissioners before we adjourn.
All right, colleagues, any questions?
None.
All right, thank you. Then we are in adjournment. Thank you for your service.
Thank you, Madam Chair.